It's good to know, because I failed kindergarten. For that very reason of not really wanting to fall into these, you know, little marshaled rules.
Well, that was what my my nephew, my brother's, no, my grandnephew, my brother's
grandson.
Daughter's son. That would be my grandnephew,
mm-hmm.
wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Anyway, my grandnephew, he failed kindergarten.
Yeah.
And the teacher wanted him to, when he's in the kindergarten, ought to put, have him be put on Ritalin, because he was looking out the window all the time. He was never paying attention. And she'd have to shout at him to get him to look at her, and then she'd start talking, and pretty soon he'd just be looking out the window. And finally, my daughter-in-law, what she said was, well, we asked him what the problem was, and he said, the teacher is boring. She said, much more interesting looking out the window. So
when you get...
And he and by the way, he has all this imagery all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, strange kid. He knows all kinds of stuff. He knows stuff that they couldn't possibly know, except that he knows it.
So when you get this good connection, it reminds me, I went to see a Tibetan teacher, a guy from Tibet, and he taught for 5 days in California. And he was great. He was really funny, and he, you know, taught for hours on end and talked and was very easy. Even though he was quite elderly, very spry and happy, and everything was good. And I was leaving town on that Monday after the teachings, and I wanted to bring him a little gift just to say thank you. And the person who was hosting him said, "Oh, he's at the dentist right now." And I said, "Oh," and she said, "Yeah, he's had an abscess tooth for about a week and a half."
Oh my God.
And I said, "Are you saying that he taught us for 5 days with an abscess?" "Yeah, he didn't want to go on the medications and make you go on to fix the tooth. So he said, oh, I'll just put it off until afterward." He was able to put all of that. I mean, if you've ever had a toothache and then imagine an abscess tooth for 5 days, to be talking and laughing, and he didn't take any medications at all because he didn't want to influence his teachings. And he said basically, oh, I'll just put it aside. Well, he didn't just mean the appointment. He took the whole situation. And I think somebody asked why.
That's manipulate, and you see, that's what I call control of synchronicity control.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Or specific organ kind of.
And somebody said, well, why didn't he just fix it? And some of those things, it's more like, well, it's still better to go through that, but I have to manage the time of it. And it reminded me a little bit, Elmer, of the stories you've told when you were making these connections and things in school, and your digestive system was having problems, and you said, okay, well, you can do this, but you have to do it in the 5 minutes between classes.
Yeah, if you're gonna have any problems, it's got to be in the 5 minutes that I allow you each hour.
Right, because you didn't want to miss class.
Yeah.
So you didn't decide to stop the situation, but you managed it.
Well, yeah, and the reason I didn't want to stop it was because I was purifying.
Right.
I was getting rid of of what I would call a heavyweight physiological problem, which was I had built the wrong stuff by eating too much candy.
So your body was trying to straighten itself out.
Yeah, because I called the light, the white light, the diamond light, as I call it. I called it and I said, I got to have a physical body that will do exactly what I want for the next 4 years, and I don't want any interruptions. So do whatever is needed so that, and I go to school, and for the first 2 months I have this problem. And it was rather interesting that it was connected with a pain. I had a pain right down in the lower abdomen. And this pain, it was like the light dissolved this pain. And at the same time, I had to go to the bathroom every at the end of every hour. And one day, Stan Groff called me up and he says, have you ever had any problems with the pain in the lower abdomen? And I said, yeah. And at one time, I thought maybe it was that I had picked up a tapeworm or something from when I was overseas. Mm-hmm. And he said, no, he's convinced, because he and I, we described what the symptoms were, and they were identical. And he said, I've decided that karma is, and I put that in the book somewhere, mm-hmm. karma is stored in the lining of the intestines.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
I've been
told that. And that's the second brain. See, you have two brains, mm-hmm. one in your head and one in the GI tract. And the one in the GI tract is the one that has a karma in it, according to Stan Groff anyway. Well, that makes sense, though, because that was my problem. In other words, I was trying to clear up my body so that I could go to school for 4 years and not be interrupted.
And you've said that as we're beginning to connect with our high selves, I've heard you say before, well, that's when the problems really begin, because the body, you have to get yourself cleared out in order to do that.
Yeah.
So one of the things I wonder is, so often when folks have problems, I think it's important to think about, is it a problem that's helping to clear the body and bring it toward mm-hmm. balance mm-hmm. or away from balance?
Right.
And often people aren't thinking that way. They're just thinking, I have to stop this illness.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think most problems is the body. I mean, what we call symptoms, it's simply the body trying to bring it back into balance.
Mm-hmm.
But the things that it's doing to try and bring it back into balance, such as diarrhea or, you know, pain, are annoying to us, and we think that the symptom is the problem rather than what's the cause behind the cause behind the cause that the body's trying to repair.
You know, that's interesting, because people don't realize that the body is 100% reflector, indicator
mm-hmm.
of all of the psychological, the astral, and the mental, and other peculiarities that we have in the unconscious as well as in the conscious. I mean, there aren't very many people that really believe that the body really has all of these symptoms, like you were saying, because of stuff that's in us at other levels. On the other hand, I was impressed to find out from reading the Tibetan that the body self is alive, apart from us. It isn't just a reflection of our etheric energy. It actually has its own etheric energy. So that it has its own program. So we have two problems. We have our problem in the body, and we have the body's problem too. And normally the body doesn't care what you do as long as you don't upset it.
So would this be an example of someone being in a coma where part of the energy has left and is not present, but the body's etheric energy is still keeping the body alive, even though it appears that nobody's home.
Yeah, that was the case, you know, that Douglas tells about with Rolling Thunder,
mm-hmm.
where he went into the room where the woman was in the coma for a long time, and he sits in the chair, he closes his eyes, and it looks like he's gone to sleep. And then pretty soon they both wake up. And they ask him, well, what happened? And he says, oh, I just went to the place of the accident and I found her and told her that her friend was not going to come back, that her friend had gone on and was never going to come back, so she might as well come back. And so then she came back.
Didn't he also follow her cord of her astral body to where she was sitting?
Well, that's how he found out where she was.
Right.
Yeah. Because the physical body, there's a cord between the physical body
and
the soul. And she was sitting on a rock. Her soul body was sitting on a rock by the wrecked car, mm-hmm. waiting for her friend to come back. But her friend rose up into the sky.
And said, don't wait for me.
And said, yeah. but she's still sitting there waiting. And he says, she's not going to come back, so come back. You come back with me. So then they both wake up in the hospital at the same time. That's pretty interesting, because this stuff is very nicely described if you read all 8 books, that, I mean 10 books of Castaneda. You find Don Juan explains this very nicely. And that would be the second attention.
Elmer, I have a question going back to the third proposition. In that you say that this soul is our true self, this capital soul is our true self, though we may not be aware of its existence until the very moment of the body's death. And while I see that, and that's one version, with the idea of the descent of the spirit, my sense is that spirit is making an effort to communicate with our mortal soul on an ongoing basis, or I don't know how often, but it seems like it's making that effort. But the question that I always have, or have had for much of my life, is, are there any indicators or ways to tell when one's true self is speaking, as opposed to one's,
regular soul.
Right.
Yeah, because the regular soul has all of our emotions in it, and all the subconscious emotions, and all the karmic emotions.
Yeah.
They're all stored in our soul. in the unconscious and conscious.
And so I think I'm, speaking in terms of, it's like, how do you know when your high self is speaking to you?
Well, the way the Tibetan explained it, he said you do your meditation regularly enough until you recognize the voice, and you hear a voice. In the beginning, you hear a voice. It isn't as if you know something. It's just you hear a voice, and he says it's the voice of the high self, but the high self is what he calls the solar angel. And the solar angel, I mean, isn't it amazing? We have all these parts. We have our personality parts, physical, emotional, and mental parts. And then we have our immortal soul. But the immortal soul is so far advanced over the personality that it can't make itself heard. And so what it does, it then asks the solar angel, and that's a third character.
Mm-hmm.
It asks us, and literally, according to Monitor, and according to the Tibetan also, they come from the sun. And this is part of their education. Mm-hmm. They come to Earth to help humans, and this is part of their development. Then they're assigned, that high self is assigned to that immortal soul, and that high self and that immortal soul stay together for what, 1,500 lives? In any event, until the little soul becomes aware of the high self, and first that they get the voice, they hear it as a voice. And then after a while, when they get good enough, they start seeing it as imagery, and then finally it switches into just plain knowing.
Mm.
And the way the Tibetan puts it is, you'll learn by experience, because some things that you do will work. Some things will have synchronicities, positive synchronicities attached to them. Whereas if you're following psychic guides, you'll have lots of troubles. Sooner or later, you'll have a lot of troubles.
And one thing, Elmer, that I found very helpful in my experience, and I think Carolyn May said it, but I could be wrong, but it's always proven to be true, I believe, is that when the information is coming from the high self, there's no emotion attached to it. And very often those other voices are beguiling, or they're pandering one way or another to emotions. If it's some part of us, there's a hook that you can almost feel, whether it's a mental hook or an emotional hook.
And by the way, this is described This is described by Don Juan and Tibetan. It's total detachment.
Yeah. It's just like, whoa.
And the other thing that I learned about it is, you say, well, what should I do? And you meditate, and you get this idea. It's like, do this. And if you don't do it, it doesn't tell you again. It's, instead, it lets you have the trouble that you get from not doing it. And then after you have that trouble, and you say, well, if that didn't work, what do you advise? And you'll say the same thing again. But if you don't do it, it lets you have the trouble of not doing it.
Yeah, it doesn't harass you.
It never harasses you. It always waits.
Yeah.
Laura, what you said is really interesting. I can't think of the name of the guy who presented at ICEM the year Bo and I were on the program committee, but he was from Stanford, and he had spent 25 years studying intuition.
Uh-huh.
And one of the prime factors he found in distinguishing a true bit of intuition from something else was that it was without emotion.
Yep.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, and this is in my experience, I haven't read this anywhere, but when what I discern is true high self communication, it has just a whiff, meaning I could be in the middle of my normal day, but when that intuition comes in, it's a whiff of what you're describing on the Audubon. There's that sense of pure joy, just, and it may only happen that long while that information's coming in, but there, it's like for a second, it's almost like you get raised above the clouds, and then you might go back to your normal. But that's subtle. I mean, that took a while to find.
It's rather interesting that the solar angel is level 21 of the states of consciousness diagram, and there is no emotion in it.
Right.
It's pure, detached, mental knowing.
So that brings up a question then, just as we're saying this. So when we have communication with the solar angel or the high self, can it happen both ways? Meaning, can we as personalities temporarily go up to level 21? And then alternately then, can sometimes the high self come down below level 21 to communicate with us?
Well, the way I understand it is this. The high self is always sending messages down.
Right.
And the personality that is the soul, the little soul, is usually not listening, unless it had trouble, which is our lot in life, is trouble. And after people have learned how to listen, they start hearing the voice of the high self. But the high self is the voice of the lotus level, and that's our eternal self. Because it's the one that speaks English. The other one doesn't speak English. Now, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It speaks all languages.
Mm-hmm.
But the
one that really speaks our language is the high self. Those are the ones that I describe in the book as the lions.
The high selves.
Yeah. They're always, excuse me. The high self is always described as a lion.
Aslan.
Mm-hmm.
Aslan.
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting that in the Christian pictures where the saints are riding on lions,
mm-hmm.
that is, the lotus is riding on the lotus self is riding on a lion. And the lion is learning how to be a useful agent. And by the time we have learned everything that we're supposed to learn, and we graduate from Earth school, and we don't need the high self anymore because we become the lotus, then the high self has learned all this stuff and it can go back to the solar, and this is now what Monitor says, it goes back to the solar logos, and this is the elevation of our solar system. Not only does our planet are we elevated, but our planet is elevated and the whole solar system is elevated.
Mm-hmm.
You're saying that every time we are elevated, that the solar system, I mean, that everything gets elevated at the same time?
Sure. It's because of the fact that everyone on the planet is in tune. We're all part of one being. Oh, and by the way, Don Juan finally explains this to Castaneda. And he says, when you become advanced enough as a seer, you finally get so you can see that the whole planet is a giant cocoon of energy. Mm-hmm. And all the little cocoons of energy called people are all selves. Isn't that amazing? Because that's exactly what the Tibetan says. And that's exactly what Carl Jung said. Mm-hmm. There's a collective unconscious. Mm-hmm. And every human being on the planet is part of the collective unconscious. And every time we think anything, it influences everybody else, everywhere else. The first time I ever heard anything about this is when the teacher said that I was asking the teacher questions about this. In 1939, and he said, and I put this in the book, an injustice done to anybody, anywhere on this planet is an injustice done to you. And when I asked him to explain that, he said, you're all part of the same being. Mm-hmm.
Christ said, when you've done it under the least of these, so have you done it under me.
Whatsoever you do unto my...
You're all part of the same being.
Right.
Part of what I was thinking about just actually reminded me on the way here was, in a strange sort of way, the communications of the internet and so on have become a biofeedback mechanism for the planet. Because I was listening to the hunger crisis that's going on right now that has directly to do with the increase in creating ethanol to deal with the oil problem is creating shortages in all of the cultures that are dependent on corn. Mm-hmm. And it's reaching crisis proportions within months. I mean, right now it's happening. Mm-hmm. But this shift has happened in a matter of months, but we're already aware of it and trying to do something about it. And I think about how fast that turnover is where it took, I mean, the oil crisis has literally taken decades to really get a grasp of what all the problems are. And this food one is happening in months.
Well, it's like Bill Moyer said, he had somebody on there talking about ethanol.
Yeah, that was good.
And the biggest sin that has ever been pulled on this planet is to use food to make gasoline. Because it takes 80 gallons of corn to make 1 gallon of gas.
Yeah.
And you can burn up 1 gallon of gas in 10 minutes if you're going fast enough.
Yep. And the problem is there are so many cultures that are reliant dominantly on corn that are starving right now.
Well, and even worse, it turns out that a lot of the corn farmers are rice farmers. Now the rice farmers in America have quit raising rice because now they can raise corn.
Yeah.
And so they quit raising rice, then it turns out a lot of the world's population lives on rice. I couldn't believe this. The price of rice doubled in 2 months.
Yeah.
And people all over the world now are in starvation mode. What was it the guy said? 1 million people are dying every day of starvation now.
And this is like happened in a matter of months, not years. And the fact that we know this, we can see.
And it's right now. And ADM says we got to have more ethanol,
right?
And they got control of a large fraction of the farmers in Kansas now have switched from wheat to corn. Now the price of wheat has doubled.
Yep.
So, rice, corn, and wheat have all doubled in price.
And dairy.
Mm-hmm.
And dairy products.
Mm-hmm. All dairy products also.
Well, and of course,
virtually doubled.
And then beef.
Yep.
Because of the fact that the beef they live on corn too, or a lot of them do.
Yeah.
Well, when Houston Smith studied the wisdom traditions, this is what he observed, and that was his concept of the great chain of being, that from the smallest and simplest thing on up, each of those, that each holon is is part of a larger whole on, which is part of a larger whole on, and so on up, just like a molecule is part of a cell, and the cell is part of an organ, and an organ's part of the body, and so on. So, yeah, it's all.
Let's see, who was it invented, the Gaia hypothesis? Lovelock, was it? I think so.
I think so.
Yeah, anyway.
I want to write that down.
He believes the same thing, though, that the planet, the whole planet, reflects what we're doing. And the fact now that what we're doing has eliminated half of the frogs on the entire planet have died.
Mm-hmm.
50% of the frogs have died. And they're vanishing very rapidly. And the reason is we've somehow polluted the whole planet. I don't know in what way that we polluted it, so the frogs can't live.
Any kind of heavy metal, which is we put into the air through our emissions, the
could
amphibians
be could be mercury.
Yeah. Mercury, absolutely. Lead. We did an experiment in my freshman biology class in college where we took frog eggs and put different dilutions of environmental toxins. And even in the slightest dilution, they had very difficult time surviving. And, you know, there are all these reports of two-headed frogs and, you know, deformed,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, so even the ones that are surviving they're the new canaries,
mm-hmm.
That show us this. But getting back to the third proposition, and the immortal soul is our true self, though we may not become aware of its existence until the very moment of the body's death. And I think what's happening right now, because even though we live in a culture where we're comfortable, we can go buy food, we can put gas in our cars, people are feeling the stress of it. They are feeling in ways that are hard for them to understand what's going on, this connection that we were just talking about, of being part of Gaia, being part of when somebody else is starving. And if a million people are starving on any one day, and you have some sensitivity left, you feel that pain. And although on some levels, like in Laura's story with the Tibetan teacher, he could avoid feeling the pain of an abscess tooth for 5 days because he had an engagement to do teaching and that was his highest priority. There are times when feeling the pain is really important. And if you're putting your hand on a stove, you need to feel that pain. When millions of people are dying every day, we need to feel that pain. And that's part of being aware of our true self while we're still inhabiting our physical body.
It's interesting that in that little section called the Golden Rock Man,
mm-hmm.
and this the Golden Rock Man phase follows the liberation from the planet. If you become detached enough, you can leave the planet, and that's called the fourth initiation. And you can just plain old, you don't have to come back. Now that, John Lilly told me he didn't have to come back, Stan Groff told me he didn't have to come back, Elise told me, after our first child was born, when Sandra was born, when she was in an out-of-body state and the teachers were there, and they said, you don't have to go back. In other words, if they've gotten to the fourth initiation, they don't have to come back, but they haven't yet solved the problem with the body. They haven't saved the body. And the Tibetans said, you're born in order to save the substance out of which you are made. And if you haven't saved the body, which is part of you, that is, at least it's what you're using,
mm-hmm.
If you haven't saved the body, You can leave, but if you don't leave, then you have to come back and you're stuck with saving the body. And saving the body is turning it into this golden being. Or, I mean, that's maybe a metaphor. But anyway, into a radiant being. And that's the golden being. And it's rather interesting that this teacher that you were talking about that knew everything but could handle his tooth.
Yeah.
See, he hadn't gone through the fifth. He hadn't gone through the fifth. He had come back. He possibly was liberated, and he could have gone on. But since he came back, then he has to save the physical body, and the physical body has its own problems.
Yep.
In other words, all the problems aren't karmic. They're not our karma, because the physical body has its karma. That's amazing, isn't it? It has its karma. And those are called skandhas. Those are the skandhas in Tibetan, Southern Buddhism. And it has its own set of skandhas, and that is tendencies. I call it physical, emotional, and mental DNA. We have our skandhas, and we handle ours, and after we've handled all ours, we can leave. But if we don't leave, then we have to help the body handle its own problems. And the body resists like mad. The body hates it. It doesn't want to change. And so and that's the problems. That's when trouble starts. That's when trouble doubles.
Double, yeah. One of the times.
Well, I suppose we better
move to
wrap it up as far as Proposition 3 was concerned. And I have only one other thing that I'm going to read out of the chapter called Proposition Dissected after item number 3. And it says, you... And I mean capital U, I'm talking about the level 22 of the states of consciousness diagram. You are not something that waits for the death of the body to come about. You are linked to every aspect of your personality during an entire lifetime. You're linked not just to the body, but you're linked to your emotions and you're linked to your mind. And you're not your emotions, and you're not your mind, and you're not your body. but you're stuck with them.
But we sure are linked to them.
And if, however, you detect and you become conscious of the fact that you, at level 22, if you become aware of the fact that you are there, then it's because, or if you don't detect yourself, I've said it wrong. If you don't detect yourself, it's because you haven't prayed or meditated properly or used some other effective way of making contact with yourself spiritually. This is the old news. What's new about that? They've been saying that for what? Since Patanjali's time. I mean, 4,500 years we've been hearing this. Mm-hmm. Nothing new.